This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. It is here. It is Friday. Good to be with you. Payday around here is what we call that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. We got additional money in our accounts today, Seth. Not additional. It's money that we earned. They didn't sprinkle any extra on there. This is not the time for sprinkling extra on. But it does feel good to have a few extra shekels in there. How are you this morning, my friend?
Good. Largely, this is a meaningless game we're playing today. Every single day we come to work, it's meaningless. And yet, we're coming to work. Unlike Dame Lillard, who says he won't play in meaningless games. I'm happy to come to a meaningless job.
You don't see you and I as essential workers during this pandemic?
Oh, that's right. We are. That's right. We provide.
We're labeled essential.
I'm the only way that people can even hear. This show is the only way people can hear the COVID commissioner of Harris County.
We have the exclusive.
That's a fictitious position.
Yeah.
But that's the only place I talk. Yeah. That's my daily, basically, Sean. That's my little bit of free exposure as I run for office in 2020.
A self-proclaimed commissionership over a virus that's spreading around the globe.
I wonder, you know what? You know what I should have done? I wonder if I could have just started showing up at meetings.
Oh, yeah.
Insane.
Like Lena Hidalgo's press conference.
If I had a name tag that said COVID commissioner, I wonder how long it would be before somebody actually challenged that. I could just keep blaming it on other branches of the local government, you know? Oh, yeah, Health and Human Services sent me over. And the mayor's office would say, okay, cool. We don't want to look like the ones that are shutting out the Health and Human Services department. And then meanwhile, I would tell HHS, I'd be like, oh yeah, the mayor's got me covered, and I would just have a beautiful deck of House of Cards built. At which point, I would say it'd take me about 6 months to gain full control of the Astrodome.
Yeah,
and I would be in charge of its future.
If you had a badge on and you just started saying things, there's a large percentage of people out there that would believe you just based on wearing a badge.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like when rumors and things like that get floated out by somebody who has a website, they're like, oh, well, look, you know, it's big trade rumors. You know, we talked yesterday, that website that could barely string a sentence together. They got J.J. Watt going to Chicago, you know?
That's right, yeah. I don't know, Sean. I can't risk having my Twitter account suspended. Yeah. It's the only thing that I have any value or pride of in my life anymore.
That's not true.
You know, the wife and kids, obviously.
Right,
but,
yeah.
you know, aside from all of that, it's the only thing I really care about.
Sure. So, so the big news yesterday here in the state of Texas was that Governor Abbott, this kind of, it came out of left field for me, at least. Like, I don't know that this was something that was expected. I don't know how you feel about it, Seth, like how surprised you were. But things have continued to reopen around here in the state of Texas. You know, the bars reopened late last week to about 25% capacity. So we sampled about a half dozen of them on Saturday last weekend. Restaurants are now back open to 50% capacity. Salons, you know, hair salons, gyms. Things like that. All things that people are partaking in to varying degrees. Governor Abbott opened up stadiums for outdoor pro sports at 25% capacity yesterday.
Yep. So the first question that immediately a lot of Texans fans had was, okay, is NRG technically an outdoor stadium since that roof is about as unused as a 97-year-old's garter belt? I don't right. like they're she's not getting frisky much these days, and neither is NRG. I would imagine they get up there and hand crank it open if that turns it into an outdoor stadium.
Well, I think it's electric, but
it used to be. Yeah. Who knows when the last time those motors were used?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the only time we ever hear about that thing opening is when there's a bond to improve the opening system.
Yeah,
$300 million for the for NRG to be able to open its roof.
I would imagine the roof has to be open for it to be an outdoor stadium.
Yeah, no, I know. But even then, because with the roof open, it doesn't really feel like you're outdoors, does
right.
it? Yeah, but I'm guessing that'll be considered an outdoor stadium.
Yeah, I'm guessing it would be too. And it was funny, there was a lot of skepticism that I saw on Twitter last night. When I retweeted it, with much enthusiasm that the governor announced this, because this, again, is a step that gets us closer. It gets, it at least creates an environment where it feels like we're, getting back to normal, B, sports are getting back into our lives. Who knows what's going to happen here in the future, second wave, things like that. I don't know, but I think I like that these positive steps are being taken to get sports back, obviously. And there were a lot of people skeptical as to whether or not the Texans would open the roof. And I'm like, for 25% of the gate versus 0% of the gate, they will open the roof. The only reason they stopped doing it, Seth, if I'm not mistaken, was because the sun was, you know, even on days where on the weather report it looks like it's nice outside, like, oh, it's 78 and sunny. Well, if you're sitting in the sun at NRG Stadium, it feels a lot hotter than 78 degrees.
The big problem is this, Sean. People can't stop bitching about stuff no matter what. So right. The problem would be when the Texans would have a day where it would feel like, oh, of course the roof should be open, they would open it up and they would still get flooded with complaints about the sun being too hot at various points during the game. If they keep it shut, they get complained. They're damned if they do, damned if they don't. So then what happens also is, the other big drawback is that on television broadcasts, with that roof open, you get that issue that you see sometimes with other stadiums where you almost can't see what's going on in the dark area of the field, or when the ball moves from a dark area of the field to a bright area of the field, it washes out the cameras because there's such a stark contrast between the shadows in the sunlit area that it makes it tough for the TV broadcast. I think if it allows you to have 25% of the fans there and maybe a slightly less effective TV broadcast, I'm guessing they'd choose to have the 25% of the fans.
Does it matter to the players? I mean, you played in some games there where the roof was open and games where maybe the roof should have been open or whatever. Does it matter to the any difference to the players?
I'll tell you this. I'll tell you that damn Dom Capers, who I love, in 2005 decided that we were going to show the Steelers how tough it was to play in the hot weather, so we kept the roof open. And let's see. I can remember Gary Walker wasn't playing. I think Robert Smith got hurt on the first drive. The Steelers marched down on like a 12-play drive on the first play of the game. We lost half of our good defensive players, and guys were just spent, and it was hot as hell. So, like, by the time that the Steelers were a superior team, and they ended up actually having the advantage of the heat that game because their offense was better, they just kept rolling. So, yeah, it does matter in terms of just the sun on your face and whatnot.
That's, I wasn't here for that, but that's the game that I hear about all the time when the roof gets brought up. Yeah. By people who are at I always hear about that, the Steeler game in 2005 where they decided to open the roof for the game, and there were people. I mean, you're talking about people on defense passing out. There were people in the stands passing out during that game as well. Yeah, I'm looking at it. Week two.
Plus, I don't think the heat advantage, by the way, this is a little bit off topic, but we're talking about this story. I don't think the heat advantage is all that great in September. I mean, most of those teams have been practicing in at least 90-degree weather at times up north. Down here, we're practicing in the bubble half the time. So that by the time, you know, you get into October and November, some of those northern teams haven't felt heat in a while. Then it's a huge advantage. September, I just feel like, man, everybody's miserable. There's nobody – everybody, like – practicing a couple times in hot weather didn't prepare me for 105 degrees on the field temperature.
Tell that to the 300-pound guy drinking his fourth beer in the first quarter who's passing out and having to be taken to first aid.
That was the big part. Everybody was complaining about how many people had to go see the EMS.
I'm looking at the that game on Pro Football Reference, and I'm looking at the first drive that you're talking about. Willie Parker tore you guys up on that drive. Willie Parker, 19 yards. Willie Parker over the right guard for 2 yards. Willie Parker up the middle.
Over the right guard?
Yeah.
What was the down and distance on that play?
That was first and 10.
Oh, son of a bitch, I was in there.
But it's for 2 yards.
Oh, 2 yards.
Yeah, two yards.
Okay.
No, the first.
I thought you said for 19
yards.
No,
the first play was for 19 yards. It doesn't say what part of the line he went through on
that
one.
Does it say tackle Seth Payne?
It's the 19-yard one is tackled by Marcus Coleman. That's never good when your corners are making tackles downfield.
I think he might have moved to safety that year, but yeah.
Let's see. If it doesn't look like you made any tackles on that first drive.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Did I have any tackles in the game?
Hang on. Let me look. I love doing this. Is one of my favorite exercises. Old Seth Payne box scores.
This is, I don't like the good offensive performances where
see,
I.
Where is Seth Payne? There you are, right down here. You had one tackle in that game.
Oh, What a fraud.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
This should have gotten rid of me sooner.
I'm sure there were people calling the post-game show saying, cut Seth Payne in week two.
It might have been one of those. I'm going to say this. I'm going to say it was one of those games where the worst is a nose tackle. DJ Reader can feel me on this one. The worst is a nose tackle is when a team comes out, an offense comes out in three wide, mm-hmm. like three wide receivers. So your defense is on nickel, so the nose tackle's off on the sideline, and then the offense just starts running it right up the gut. And all you can think is like, damn it, these jamokes on TV and in the stands have no clue that I'm not in there, and they're running right up the middle. This is going to get blamed on me afterwards. I'm going to have 20 snaps in this game, and it's because we can't stop the run in nickel. I almost used the bad word.
Yeah, I almost used the... Yeah, that's what you wanted to say.
I almost used the C word.
Oh, jeez. That would have been a way to get going on a Friday.
I just remember, listening to 610 one day. We were coming home after a game, and it was one of those types of games where the opposing offense was in three wide or one back or whatever all the times where we were in nickel and dime most of the game. And I remember listening to the post-game show where somebody, I don't know who it was saying like, well, look, they're running right up through the middle. I don't know what Seth Payne was doing, but
they
were running
name?
Up through the middle. I was like, I'm standing on the damn sideline. You son of a bitch. That's what I was doing.
Oh, that's funny.
You need to take this up with Dom Capers, who doesn't seem to think I can rush the passer well enough to be in there on nickel and dime.
I'm working on my inside push. Is Scott Boras overstepping his bounds in this Major League Baseball standoff? That's next. It's a big few days coming up for baseball here. If they intend on starting their second spring training in the middle of June, they got to figure something out here in the next few days. It's June 1st on Monday.
Premier League is up and running, right? Like
yeah.
By mid-June? All right, now I'm getting antsy. If Premier League, if the Euros are doing it, they're super careful about stuff.
Premier
right?
League, and they put out their TV schedule, and I'm not a huge Premier League guy, but I saw the TV schedule of like not specific games, but what their standard template's going to be for a Saturday and a Sunday. And it's basically soccer from noon to like 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, So here in America, it's going to be soccer from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m.
Like
all day,
yeah.
All of your buddies that have become EPL fans over the last few years are going to be just completely gone all Saturday.
Right, all you hipsters out there who embrace the EPL all of a sudden in your middle age.
You became a soccer fan just so you could wear a cool jersey out in public.
Right.
Yeah.
So baseball, it's a big couple days here, Seth, for baseball. And Scott Boras, who is there? There's the players, there's the owners, and then there's Scott Boras. That's what it feels like. Scott Boras has somehow injected himself into all this, and it's because he is the guy who controls a lot of the really, really big names in baseball as an agent. He is recommending that his clients refuse Major League Baseball's attempt to cut salaries during negotiations with the players' union, claiming team financial issues caused by the pandemic have their origin in management debt financing. In an email that was obtained by the AP, Boras wrote that players should not alter terms of the agreement that they made back in March with the owners that called for the players to reduce their salary based on a prorated portion of the season that they would be playing in. So Boras said, this is one of the quotes, "Remember, games cannot be played without you. Players should not agree to further pay cuts to bail out the owners. Let owners take some of their record revenues and profits from the past several years and pay you the prorated salaries you agreed to accept, or let them borrow against the asset values that they created from the use of those profits that players generated." So Boras is kind of taking the same stance that we've seen a lot of the big names take, which is we're not moving. We're not budging on our salaries here. We'll come up with some other solution. Trevor Bauer does not like the fact that Scott Boras is getting involved in this. Trevor Bauer tweets, "Hearing a lot of rumors about a certain player agent meddling in players' association affairs. If true, and at this point they're only rumors, I have one thing to say. Scott Boras, rep your clients however you want to, but keep your damn personal agenda out of union business."
Yeah.
Isn't Scott Boras taking the same side that a lot of these guys are taking?
I think he is, but look, he's also preserving his own self-interest, right? It's been interesting in baseball where I've seen a lot of baseball writers all of a sudden start citing agents as almost the voice of the players, which is a very dangerous thing to do because Scott Boras represents a bunch of the richest players in Major League Baseball. He has other clients as well. But who is he going to be most loyal to? He's going to be loyal to the guys that are paying him the most money. So this latest proposal from Major League Baseball, which I don't like, by the way. I don't like this proposal either by Major League Baseball. But
you're talking about the one where the rich players take by far the biggest haircut.
Yeah. And I feel like it's just an effort by owners to sow discord within the ranks of the union.
Yep.
But I also don't, I'm not going to sit here and listen to Scott Boras as the voice of the players or some of these other unnamed agents who have said that the response to this was swift and vicious. None of the players love it. All right, you guys are all going to be talking chiefly for your biggest clients, which I'm guessing, like everything else in life, there's an 80-20 scenario here where 20% of an agent's clients provide 80% of his income, you know, like the really big guys at the top. So, of course, Boras is going to say all this. I don't think it should be looked at as the voice of the player or anything.
Well, okay, so we're at kind of a critical juncture in this whole thing, Seth. I think we can all agree on that. Just from a timing perspective, if nothing else. But I think also just because I think the public is getting pretty fed up with the fact that these guys can't come to an agreement. Most often with these work stoppages, I mean, we see it in football all the time, but the work stoppages, especially the ones where the owners wind up quote-unquote winning in a work stoppage, it usually just comes down to resources, right? It usually just comes down to the owners have more money than the players and they can wait this whole thing out. Is there anything that makes this particular standoff different in your mind?
I don't know if it's even this particular standoff. I think it's that, yes, the owners have more financial power in a tip-up, but that works against them now, doesn't it? Because forever we've heard, well, look, the owners can, they can financially afford to miss an entire season, whereas a lot of these players don't, can't afford it. And now we're in a position of having to listen to the owners say that, wait a second, you can't afford to miss an entire season? That doesn't seem to make much sense at all. If the strength before was that you could miss an entire season and still be okay, but the players can't, it's been a pretty damn good decade or two financially for pro sports leagues. Yep. I don't believe that they can't withstand losing out on the salary. Now, the other thing is this. I think almost just by virtue of the positions they have and almost just the age of the players, the owners have to be more sensitive to public sentiment than the players do. The players already have public sentiment on their side to a certain degree. They're the ones that people love. You know, people love Jose Altuve. They don't they might respect Jim Crane, but they love Jose Altuve. So the owners are the ones that are going to suffer more if the public says, all right, I don't like baseball anymore. The players do too, because the revenue is going to go down. But I think the owners are more attuned to that.
Yeah.
And the players might be more belligerent in saying, like, all right, well, screw you. I don't like this deal. And no, I'm not going to do this. The one really good point Boras makes in here is that in a lot of ways, it feels like the owners are asking the players to bail them out.
Yes.
But not giving the players any chance to recoup their bailout money. You know, like if you go to a bank in a time of duress, the bank's going to say, well, okay, yes, we've loved working with you in the past, and we're going to help you out here, but it's going to cost you a little bit. We're going to have to charge you a higher interest rate, you know, and we'll get our money back. And the owners aren't really affording the players that opportunity right now. We'll see what the counter proposal is.
Yeah.
Maybe there is something on the back end after all this is hashed out.
I still think it's going to end up being some form of deferral. I still think the players are going to get all their money, but they may agree to a system where they're just not getting it in 2020. You know, they'll get it in 2021. Maybe there will be some interest tacked on, something like that. But I think ultimately that's going to be what the solution is in all this. By the way, you can get action, Seth, on whether or not there will be Major League Baseball this season.
Oh, of course you can. Yeah. What are we saying now?
Yes is still a heavy favorite. Yes is -500, which is you got to lay $500 to win a scant $100. No is 3-1. You can put $100 on no and get three times your money back.
I will put my good money down. I'm not going to bother making a -500 bet.
Yeah.
I would bet that there will be a regular season, even if it's like five games, even if it's one game and then everything gets canceled because there's an outbreak or something.
You'd still get to play. You'd still get your money, yeah.
Can I say the weird thing in all this? This is where I've been having a hard time with this Major League Baseball potential labor dispute. I feel like we're in a unique situation where I'm arguing for labor. I'm arguing for the players, but I'm like the one that's being most capitalistic in doing that. I'm saying, like, no, on the basis of a free market and the economy and everything else, I feel like labor is in the right here to hold to their contracts. Yeah. And meanwhile, management is the one asking for a handout. It's driving me insane.
Yeah.
You can't continue to allow professional owners to play both decks, basically,
right.
To keep continuing to take out handouts from the government and taxpayers while at the still time making oodles and oodles of money. Treat them like the successful business people they are. You've earned a whole bunch of money. You can withstand this without having to ask for a loan from your employees. Gosh, God, grow a pair, why don't you? Be a man.
And/or
ovaries and whatever.
JJ Watt. On life after football, how much does he think about life after football, especially amidst this weird offseason? That's next. I think it's safe to say that J.J. Watt is in the upper tippy-top percentage of NFL players who have many, many options once they're done playing football. J.J. Watt was asked about that on Wednesday in his press conference, if this strange offseason has given him any perspective on life after football.
Not really, no. I mean, I can understand why I may do that. I mean, I've certainly thought about what it looks like when I'm done and what I plan to do afterwards. I still don't have the answer. I wish I did, but I don't have the answer to what it'll look like when I'm done. I think that something that I've learned over the last multiple years is just day by day, taking it day by day. You know, I think that early on, I definitely let those thoughts creep into my head far earlier than I think I wish I would have. Because I mean, obviously I went through some injuries back in 2015, 2016. And so, I think that I preemptively jumped to those types of thoughts. And I think that I'm not much more now on a day to day, just very excited about getting up, working, competing and going to work.
So I mean, JJ is, I mean, obviously Seth, he's got plenty of things he can do when football's over. And there's a lot of things he's been doing, even though he's dialed some of it back. He's dipped his toe in the water with a lot of different things, with acting, I'm sure he's got business ventures. He's one of the biggest philanthropists in all of football. There's a lot of things that he can be involved with simultaneously once his playing career is over. I thought the interesting just little snippet, the little tiny like five words in there that I was curious to get your thoughts on at the very beginning where he says, I'm not really sure what I want to do after football. I wish I did. Was that just a drive-by comment where he's just kind of just dropping that in there, or is that something that players, maybe players like JJ, think about going, man, I this thing's probably going to be over when I'm 33, 34, 35 years old. I wish I had a better idea of what the future looked like.
Well, I think it's really common, and the problem is no matter how well you plan for your life after a football, you never really know what you actually are going to want to get into or what you're going to be good at. When he said that, I actually immediately thought, or when you mentioned, you know, that he could go into media, I immediately thought of Tiki Barber. Because remember Tiki was going to be the next big media thing. He was going to be amazing. It was going to be phenomenal. A lot of people predicted for Tiki what Michael Strahan is doing now, where he is a crossover hit.
Yep.
You know, he could be on Good Morning America and also do football stuff. He was just going to be this giant star.
Right.
And it just didn't pan out for Tiki, like, cause you could check off all those boxes, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't have that same charisma as a Michael Strahan. So he's still doing well, you know, he's got a successful radio show, but I don't know if that's necessarily the life he envisioned post football. So, and I think JJ has seen that enough. Like, you might think, okay, I want to go into commercial real estate when I'm done. But you can only be a part-time guy in the off season when you're a player, and it's a whole different deal when you go into it when you're done playing, when you're trying to balance a family. Some guys think, like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to play golf every day. That gets old super fast when you're a young, driven person, you know, and you can either start to divert yourself with just alcohol or drugs or whatever else. So for a lot of guys, football players, I mean, you know, I've talked to a lot of guys in the military, obviously much more serious in the military, but similar people who enjoy structure and routine, you know, people who thrive in the military probably have a lot of the same personality characteristics as people who thrive in athletics because they like that structure. They like that challenge. They like that routine. Then all of a sudden you're like cast out into the world without a real specific plan. and then you don't even know if there is a plan that you created for yourself, if you're going to enjoy doing it. That's, I think that's what he means where he says, like, yeah, I wish I knew, because it'd be a little less uncertainty in my future.
I think there's a greater awareness of that plight of players now than there used to be, Seth, of guys. Like, JJ's not a guy that I worry about, in part because he's done some of these things already. When you're a player who's maybe not to the star level of JJ Watt, and you think about all the things that you want to do that you might be capable of doing, but you haven't tried them yet, that's a really scary thing. My guess is JJ may have less fear because he's at least tried some of these things, and has, and I think he probably has a better idea than he's letting on in that sound clip of what he wants to do afterwards. But I think there's a more heightened awareness now of just that plight that you're talking about with players. I did a piece for the Houston Press a few years ago. It was a cover piece about life after football for players. I talked to Chris Myers. It was the year after Chris retired from the Texans. I talked to him for a while. I talked to Eric Winston, who at the time I think was the president of the Players Union. I talked to Aaron Taylor, who you may remember. He was an offensive lineman for the Packers and the Chargers. I knew him from back at Notre Dame. And Aaron brought up the stat to me that I think is now a very well-quoted stat, that I think it's like two-thirds of the players, maybe 70, 75% of players, after they retire, become either dependent on substance, bankrupt, or divorced, or multiple of those things, because of in large part because of the dynamic you're talking about, where they had all this structure in their career. They had to be somewhere every minute of the day for 10, 12 years, in Aaron's case, maybe 6 or 7, because he washed out because of knee injuries. But then all of a sudden, not only do you have all this time on your hands, but there's that missing adulation that you used to get from people. You know, there was that positive feedback that you used to get all the time because you were a professional athlete, and it doesn't get replaced by anything out in society.
Yeah. And it's different for everybody. And it's not like I'm not giving a sob story or anything about, to cry for guys that are still rich and yet miserable.
Yeah, made millions of dollars, right.
But it is, I think, the reason we started talking about that was, I think a lot of people interpreted JJ's comments about not worrying about a new contract or something as, oh, he's trying to get out of here. I took them very much at face value, because I've been in that same position before, when you're getting upwards on a decade on your career, you've had a bunch of injuries, and you really genuinely want to just see yourself make it healthy through an entire season before you start thinking about, where am I going to be in 4 years? Like, I don't, you know, and JJ's also been burned before by when he just kind of arbitrarily said on our station, right, that 10 years seemed like a good number to play. And then all of a sudden there was like 2 weeks worth of hot sports takes on right. whether JJ was going to retire after year 10 and all this. Yeah. So he's learned his lesson many times over about what exactly to say in these interviews.
Yeah. So JJ, I think JJ's going to have plenty of things that he can go do.
The tough thing too is, for a lot of guys, is you get, I remember talking to, well, I won't say his name. It wasn't a bad thing. I don't know if he wants this story out publicly or not. But I was talking to a Texan that retired a few years ago. Oh, gosh, I'm getting old. Four or five years ago now. So, but his plan was, you know what? I'm going to let my wife kind of pursue her career more, because she put hers on hold for a while. And I'm just going to take care of the kids. I'm going to take them to school. And this guy's a great dad and everything.
Yeah.
But after about 18 months of that, it was like getting to the point where he was clinically depressed, because it just that's not the way he's wired and what he needed to be doing in life. You know, he couldn't be a Mr. Mom. Some guys are awesome at being a Mr. Mom. He discovered that he said it was turning him into like a 1950s housewife, where he was like, I gotta get some kind of prescription medicine or something to help me through the day. So he tried that, and then he had to try something else, and then he finally had, like, in his third attempt, you know, found himself in a business that he likes. But it wasn't because he wasn't responsible or mature, or it wasn't like he didn't educate himself. He had his college degree and everything. He just flat out, at the age of, 32 or 33 years old, just had no real clue what he enjoyed doing in life.
I
think a lot of people that have shorter careers, like, and I'll go back to the military. I'm not saying sports and the military are the same, but the same thing with a lot of guys in the military or a pension job or something. There's people that retire from jobs with a full pension, when they're only 50 years old. And they're like, oh, crap, I got 30 more years of living to do. What the hell do I do with my life?
Yeah, I need a reason to wake up every morning.
Yeah.
You know, and boy, the the player you're describing there, that, I mean, that's got to be the biggest change, right? I mean, you go from the ultimate alpha career, right? I mean, you're a gladiator for 16 Sundays or more every year with people just showering adulation, playing in front of sold-out crowds, and you go from that to making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the morning.
Well, I mean, because I did that for probably about 2 years, and I went through the same thing because I had my businesses and everything was like, I didn't have to check in on it really as that much. Everything was automatic because my plan was, okay, I'm going to be Mr. Mom and I'm going to let my wife coach, and she's a really, really good coach. So I wanted to be able to do that. And, so I was just like, oh yeah, I'll just take care of my single child. And I got to the point where I'm like, well, I started feeling guilty because I was just absolutely miserable doing just that. I just couldn't. There was something like constantly gnawing at me that I didn't feel like I was producing. And that's where the one thing I learned post football was that you spend so much time having it drilled into your head that, like, hey, you're not doing this for the money. You're doing it because you like winning. You're doing it because you love the game. You're doing all these things. It's almost dirty to say you actually enjoy making money. Right. You know, while you're an athlete, people want to buy into the whole majesty and that you're doing it for all the noble purposes.
Thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Yeah.
So that almost by the time you get out of it, you're a broken human, and the vast majority of human beings have no shame in going out and trying to make a buck, right? So, and that's what I realized is like, it's not even for any certain amount or anything. I enjoy being a worker. Like, I enjoy getting a paycheck. It feels like that's my substitution for going out and hunting game to feed my family. So I had to go back to work, you know? I feel like I'm a pretty good dad, but not the kind of guy that can do it full time without it ending up basically manifesting itself in a lot of other unpleasant things.
Did you ever think you'd be doing this when you when you were a player?
No, because I didn't enjoy. Because remember, I was telling you the story about like driving home and listening to Sports Radio 610 and hearing like that I needed to be a better nose tackle in a game in which I barely played.
Yes.
Like, yeah, they're blaming the run defense on me because I wasn't on nickel and dime like most of the day. It was like that stuff happens all the time. Like guys are criticized unfairly because of inaccurate or incomplete information, and I didn't want to be a part of that. So I was like, ah, no, screw that. I'm not going to do that. But then it got easier once I didn't get back into media until I was out for like 5 or 6 years. So most of my close friends were done playing. So I didn't have to worry about criticizing them unfairly.
Didn't you feel like, though, as a player, you're like, you know what? I'm going to get into media and I'm going to be able to be the guy that sets the record straight. I'm going to be the guy who comes in and fixes this dynamic.
No, because, well, I mean, I try to approach things as like, instead of saying, hey, this player can't do this, this player can't do that, I try to say this player should do this better, or this player needs to fix this. And then I also, because I also, if I'm going to make an X's and O's criticism, I try to back it up on film with like some of my former teammates or coaches that I know. I send a lot of video off to former teammates and coaches just to double check. They're like, hey, am I missing something? Like, this just looks like cover two. Am I missing something here? Or why is the safety doing this? Is there any reason he would be? And, you know, sometimes it adds more light to it.
That's cool. How often do you do that? I didn't know you did that.
I would say I do that almost every week, at least when I do a play for KHOU.
Yeah, when I do our Sports Extra. Yep.
I do a video breakdown, and I always want to double check, especially in the secondary. I just hate when cornerbacks or safeties are unfairly blamed for something that's not their fault. The biggest thing you discover really quickly is, and I mean, I knew this from when I was playing, so many times when something looks obvious, like, oh, this guy made the mistake, when you find out what play was actually called, you're like, oh no, the guy that makes the mistake is actually the guy who's trying to cover up. The guy you thought made the mistake is actually the guy who's trying to cover up for somebody else's mistake.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times a corner is in that trail position because there was supposed to be a safety over the top, but when the safety isn't there, it just looks like, oh wow, that corner just got dusted.
Right,
looked
right.
Like he didn't even try.
Yeah.
Look at that. It just lets him run right past him.
You know who's saying those things? Me.
Yeah.
That's why it's good. You can set guys like me straight.
Well, I honestly, that's one of the biggest lessons you could learn as a sports viewer. Never make the mistake of thinking that the defensive back closest to the reception,
his fault.
That it was his fault. Yeah.
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. We are talking about life after football. J.J. Watt pondering his. Seth, I think Whitney Mercilus is kind of dipping his toe in the water with a post-football career. Have you seen Whitney's cooking videos that he's put up on Instagram?
I saw him make one of the most delicious-looking grilled cheese sandwiches I've ever seen, and then was shocked and abhorred. Abhorred? I don't know. I was shocked and dismayed.
Appalled, I think is what
appalled.
You mean.
Appalled? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Abhorrent comments on Instagram is what I saw. I see this video, and then everybody's just mocking him for making a tutorial video on a grilled cheese sandwich like everybody out there knows how to make a good grilled cheese sandwich. They don't.
Okay, I can't implore people enough to go find Whitney's cooking videos. He's only done three of them so far, but it's clearly a series that he's doing here. You know how I know that, Seth? Because it has a logo. It's got a graphic. Like Wednesdays with Whitney or something like that. And he's in his kitchen. And when I saw that Whitney was doing cooking videos, like I just saw the tweet with the video not playing yet. You know, you got to hit play on the video. And I just see Whitney like paused standing in his kitchen. I'm thinking, this is going to be pretty cool because Whitney is part owner in a restaurant here. And at least he was. I don't know if he still is. But Whitney is big into the foodie scene.
Yep.
And so I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be cool. We're going to see, like, you know, Whitney making, you know, just some upscale dish, you know, some casserole, something like that. He's got the one that I watched. The first one I watched was the one you talked about with the grilled cheese. He's got two pieces of bread, a pallet of butter, and two pieces of cheese in front of him. And he is teaching with great enthusiasm how to make a grilled cheese sandwich to the point where he's going, make sure to leave the butter out at room temperature for 15 minutes so that it melts a little bit. He must spend 45 seconds spreading the butter on the first piece of bread to show you exactly precisely how to spread the butter. And then he puts it in the pan, and he describes putting it in the pan like nobody has ever put a grilled cheese sandwich in a pan before to cook the thing.
Yeah.
And his enthusiasm and happiness with cooking this grilled cheese sandwich, I want to bottle up and somehow chug it because he is so happy in this video making this grilled cheese sandwich. In the previous one, he made English muffin pizzas.
That's right.
And he's cutting them up. You know,
well, Sean, obviously there's people that don't know how to do this stuff, right? There's lots of guys that get out of the house for the first time. They don't know how to make any of these things. I feel like you're being a little bit elitist again, Sean.
I think I am. I am admitting that I'm being elitist because I love Whitney Mercilus and I love these videos because of their simplicity.
Sean, let me ask you this question.
Seth?
If Whitney Mercilus made a video showing and explaining A, what a tire gauge is, and B, how you use a tire gauge, would that seem like a ridiculously simple task that you yourself might be interested in watching before you tried to learn what a tire gauge is?
You just checkmated me. I got nothing.
For the listeners, Sean doesn't know what a tire gauge is.
Here's what happened.
He tried to throw out his wife's tire gauge.
Here's what happened. No, I didn't try to throw it out. This is 2 weeks ago today, she bought a new car at West Point Lincoln. And so her old car, which she was trading in, was still parked out in the concourse area, you know, the parking lot area there, the guest parking. And she asked me to go back out just as she was signing the final paperwork. She said, can you go back out to my car to check and make sure I didn't leave anything in the car? And so I check the little console area. I check the back seat. I check the trunk. I check the glove box. Oh, in the glove box, there's this thing that looks like a pen with a weird looking head on it. So I brought it back in and I showed it to her and I said, do you need this? She goes, well, yeah, I mean, I need it. I've got a new car. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she goes, you don't know what that is, do you? And I said, no. And it was a tire pressure checker. Yeah, yeah.
So I think Whitney's doing what has become almost a cottage industry, which is cooking books, etc., resources for young people who don't know any life skills, right? We got rid of home ec in a lot of schools for a while back. So you're not learning how to cook at school anymore. And a lot of, you know, it's more of a microwave society. I think this is downright brilliant on his part.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of people that come to him, A for the information, B for his personality. And I think that you're going to see more of this. You'll see him making pasta 1 week. You might see him doing, I don't know, what are the other simple things?
Oh, that he can make on that? Well, he made an English muffin pizza. Dylan Cole's comment on it, his tweet reply to Whitney Mercilus was, next week, cereal.
Well, look, there's different theories.
Kids, I have a bowl, milk, and a box of Fruit Loops.
There are people, Sean, there are people who exist who put the milk in first before they put the cereal
in. That's messed up.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like they need a video, right? Yeah. I don't feel like we laugh, and yet at the same time, sometimes I think we need to maybe give ourselves a pat on the back for actually knowing how to eat cereal. Whitney needs to teach the people who don't how to do it.
I requested hot dogs for next week.
Yeah.
Being somewhat serious, I feel like Whitney, a guy who is invested in gourmet restaurants, may have a way of making hot dogs that might make just the simple hot dog taste better than the way I do it, which is to throw it in the microwave for 45 seconds.
I'm glad you mentioned that. You know what, Sean? I've been telling my wife we need to do this forever. And I swear, I think she thinks every time I say it that I'm trying to make some dirty joke or something. Sausage making. I want to make my own sausage. Ooh. And I'm going to go buy a machine. I saw one at the wholesale club the other day. I'm going to, after the show, I'm going to go buy a sausage grinder and packer and some I'm not going to use the pig intestine casings.
Right.
I'm going to use the plant-based stuff. And I'm going to make sausages this weekend. And I'll send a video for Whitney to put out on his account.
Okay, so that was my question. Are you going to make a video, or would that be infringing on Whitney's gimmick? But you're just looking to become maybe possibly a spinoff of Whitney Merciless.
Yeah, I'd just like to grab a few followers here and there. James Palmer yesterday, his YouTube channel, his kid's YouTube channel got like 15 new viewers immediately when he mentioned it.
I went and watched the Batman video. Did you watch the Batman video?
Yeah.
James Palmer's hilarious.
He is. He's
really
the
penguin.
Good.
He was the penguin in the video. It's great.
He goes full bore into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about career transitions, and I kind of talked about people needing and wanting structure.
Yeah.
And Josh, who's been texting a bunch, I want to reward Josh by reading his text because he's been very, very active lately. Oh, he said, getting out of the Marines and working with civilians was and still is a huge adjustment. It makes me crazy sometimes. Two things about that. One is, I can remember one of my friends who was in the Air Force. He was a pilot in the Air Force for 20 years. He just got out not too long ago, and he's working as a consultant. He got a really good gig and everything. But he said, is now he's working with civilians, the thing that absolutely drives him 100% insane is the meetings. He's like, you know,
oh,
it was like
yes.
His entire working career, you know, he played football in college, and then he was in the Air Force for 20 years. And it was like, okay, you go in the meeting, here's a briefing, this is what we're going to do. This is ba-boom, 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 off we go, let's do it. And then he said to sit in these meetings where there's like an hour of small talk and chatter about sports and golf, and then people getting off track within the meetings and everything, it drives him insane.
Yeah, we do not maximize our minutes out here in the real world. I can see where that'd be a big frustration for military folks.
And, oh, the other thing too was another Marine told me once that one of the things he weirdly misses the most was being around guys who are just world-class jerks. Just like some guys that are just like, they're awesome at whatever their role is in the military, but they don't care whose feelings they hurt or what's gonna, like, they're all about whatever the objective is.
Yeah, the end result.
You kind of miss just being around people that are so brutally blunt all the time without worrying about whether you're hurting anybody's feelings.
Makes sense. Speaking of James Palmer, he had a big column about the Texans offense that we talked about with him yesterday. Will Fuller is a focal point of this article. Some of the things that people around the league are saying about Will Fuller. We'll get into that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.